so many times. Welcome to What Are You Guys Talking About?
What are you guys talking about?
All right, so welcome, folks. We are on, Jesus, this is episode 8 for us, Eddie.
We're getting
like veterans in this thing. I know. Although the podcast I usually listen to, and that's part of the reason we're making one, because I listen to a lot of podcasts around like 552, and I'm like, yeah. Wow, how many years from now will that
be? We are very much at the beginning of the journey.
That's right. The journey that takes one step. So, thank you very much for listening, and thank you for coming on. Today's topic will be the finale, episode 8 of His Dark Materials, entitled, just one word, Betrayal. And that kind of says it all, folks. So, before we get kicked off too much, please remember to like and subscribe. We are on SoundCloud with the podcast, but you can pretty much pick it up anywhere else that you can pick up a podcast, so just Google it out, or you know, on your favorite podcast platform, look it out. We are on Facebook, both with the Law of Victoria Productions, or you can contact Ed Burgos or Jason Shiro directly. We're also on Instagram. We have Enano LVP and Jazzy J Shiro. That's a clever name. Then we have Twitter. I'm So it's at Mouth Law Victoria, because I couldn't just be Mouth. There's already too many mouths on Twitter. But again, it's an easy way to get a hold of me. I do check my Twitter account regularly with that. So we're also on LinkedIn for those of you in the professional world. If you want to see, I post everything that way because, you know, between my day job and this, there are plenty of people that like to have it that way. And obviously, you can always come to our great and awesome website to see all the projects we're working on, which is www.lawvictoriaproductions.com. Again, that's www.lawvictoriaproductions.com. So, that being mine, today will be the last episode discussion on His Dark Materials, and then we are going to move on to our top 10 films, which is going to be really a study for you guys to kind of hear how we look at film. Again, a lot of this is to help you get inside our heads. We're going to take our 10 favorite films, so 10 episodes long, and each episode we're going to spend kind of dissecting and looking into what is it that we like about it. You know, Ed will talk to you a lot about the shots and the things like that. I will try to give you that production. I know, but again, it's getting inside the mind of that indie filmmaker. And maybe by listening, you myself might say, I'm an indie filmmaker too. So, with that in mind, let's kick it off. Just to start out, we always start with a bit of a recap. So, yep. Let us do the recap. Ed, why don't you start us out? How did this one start out?
Now, the previous episode was the kind of WrestleMania.
WrestleMania. Yeah, I didn't hashtag, but geez, we should have, because man, that was a good title, and it was true. Yeah,
it was pretty epic. But this one, we'll get to it
because there's something very interesting here. So to give you a foreshadowing, because I was going to bring it up in the podcast at some point, we might as well get out of the way. So I was watching this last night, and I started starting out before we do this full recap. I started out at the beginning, and I was texting Ed like, well, and I do have to make an apology as we're starting here. Roger, I am so sorry.
Okay. Yeah, Roger is redeemed.
Yes, so the opening of, and we'll get to all the different parts, but I'm just talking about what I did last night. So last night, I was texting Ed just to apologize to him, and I was like, listen, they have finally fleshed out Roger as a character.
Yeah, they did a good job.
So, they have finally fleshed out Roger as a character, and I was telling Ed this, and I texted him just saying, oh my god, finally have a reason that Roger and Lyra are so good friends, we've heard him speak for once, but I was commenting to Ed how incredibly slow it was, because it just felt really plodding, and it's the final episode, so I'm sitting there thinking like, oh man, the 7th episode kind of slowed everything down, except for WrestleMania, mm-hmm. And I was really worried, because we know we're going into season 2, that this was going to do this. But lo and behold, then, you know, whatever happens, is an hour-long episode, mm-hmm. Isn't it? So in the last, it's right before the last 20 minutes, then I started having a message spree to Ed, just being like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, it's amazing, oh my god. And we'll talk about why as we move along here. But it just was funny. And poor Ed was sound asleep, because Ed's just got a new job this week. So right. he was putting his feet up and trying to sleep. And me, I'm just, you know, going crazy on my phone saying, wake up. Oh my god, this is so good. You have to watch this now. I would have live streamed that one, because it was absolutely that good. Yeah. So anyways, on the recap. So we start out where we left off with Scary Daddy.
That's
so
right.
The opening scenes are going to be us kind of seeing Lyra in, you know, and I say James McAvoy, it's Lord Asriel's. Mm-hmm. Lord Asriel's little, not factory, but
his
lab.
His lab, yeah.
That's right. And so it starts out with that, and we get a lot of character exposition at that point.
Yeah.
Which is very necessary. As you'll see later, they're finally taking care of the Roger problem. So we get a lot of exposition about Roger and his relationship with Lyra. That is probably the first 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
There's also discussions about what Lors Asriel is doing. And he has this, do you know the name of that Scottish guy that's with him? I don't need the actor's name, I just...
The character.
So he has an assistant that's with him, and apologies as I don't know the name offhand.
He's a fantastic actor.
Fantastic actor, and been in other things before seen.
He was in Gangs in New York.
That's right. Very much a supporting character in this, though. And they're having a discussion about what Lord Asriel is actually doing. And that leads into a further discussion, which is really big exposition, between Lyra and her father. And that is another... Again, it's slow, so I was a bit put off by it because it doesn't really move very fast, but they do get to the core of, A, Lord Asriel not rejecting his daughter, but pointing out to her rightly that he's not really a father, that he just doesn't feel that's part of his thing. Mm. He's an adventurer, and so he's trying to explain to her why he's so upset about what's going on. Mm. And this is hitting at, and this is when you get the foreshadowing. So the other thing this episode does really well, I'm going to put out there right now, is the foreshadowing is excellent because it's so subtle. At first, I didn't even notice it. But here's the first time you hear about the Authority. Now, Ed, what is the Authority?
The Authority, as far as I understood it, is God.
Yes, and I found that really interesting, but partially as a producer, quite clever. Because imagine the different reaction the audience would have had at that point if he had just said God, God, God. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know for sure, so please put it in the comments if I'm wrong on this, but I think the book takes a similar approach. Mm. I don't think the book ever just calls out God as it is. But we're talking about God. Right. Just in case you didn't know, and there are people like that, and I'm not calling you stupid, but... If you didn't connect the dots on this one with Adam and Eve and the snake and all that, we're talking
that
about God, Christian God here. Yeah. This is what the Authority is. And there's a whole big backstory to that, which won't get revealed right now. Mm. But we now know what the Magisterium represents and what they do.
The church.
The dogma. Yes. Yeah. So, and
just to mention, Thorold is his assistant's name, played by Gary
Thorold. Yeah. Very good. Very good. So Thorold and him talk a bit. Then he talks with Lyra. And then Lyra goes off and we have more exposition with Roger, really. Mm-hmm. And in the background to all of this... You have kind of the Magisterium getting ready. And this is more foreshadowing. This is when I looked at it and I looked at myself. And this is when I thought about texting and being like, I think something's about to happen. Mm-hmm. Because you have these amazing looks as we get all the Zeppelins up. And I love Zeppelins, by the way.
The airships are
I
so
always
cool,
ask Ed. And Ed had to explain to me about this. And I think my father-in-law was talking to me before. But I'm the kind of person that wishes we all traveled in airships. Because I just think they're so much cooler than airplanes.
Yeah.
But apparently they're really dangerous. So that's why we don't. But you have the airships up, and the scene that really did it for me, and again, we're giving you the recap here, so I'm trying to do it quickly, but when you see all the soldiers up and ready to go, then I knew something was up. And I was like, whoa, wait. We've got a room. You know, they were doing the I watch Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's one of my favorite shows because I'm doing the MCU thing. That when they're all in the thing getting buckled up, you're like, oh, something's about to go down.
Yeah.
So, but then we have kind of the upping of the ante. So you have this kind of... And this was a part we'll talk about later. A bit of a strange thing. Lyra talks with her father one last time, wakes her up in the middle of the night, and then like puts her back to bed. And then if I remember correctly after that, that's when Asriel's gone, the Magisterium is coming, and I mean really coming. This is when we've had all the foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. And then and the man you just said, which is
Thorold
takes Lyra and starts trying to get her one way, but... Lyra knows that Lord Asriel has taken Roger.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, everybody knows what's about to happen. If you didn't at that point, and Ed may be one of the persons did, because Ed really liked the character of Lord Asriel. And if you've read the books, you know that he's not, I mean, he's not evil either. He's just driven. He's someone that has a single kind of mind. All he wants to do is the revolution.
You know, right.
Think of him as the Che Guevara of what's going on.
You can kind of understand it. But it, to me, it came as a shock.
Well, it's another shock. It's the Che Guevara. And why do I say that? Because Che Guevara is actually, for me personally, one of my favorite historical characters. But he is so misunderstood in the media, okay? Che Guevara, you know, you have to go back, and this will be one of our top 10 films. You have to watch The Motorcycle Diaries. He was a doctor, okay? He was a very normal kind of guy before he got involved in everything. And his travels through South America pushed him... You know, in a direction to thinking that things needed to change, more of a Bolivar style world. Mm-hmm. And Bolivar was someone who believed in communism and socialism and things like that. However, fast forward to when he's Che, part of the Cuban Revolution. Most people don't know this, but he had a huge family. Okay, he had a wife and two daughters, a wife that he unfortunately ends up cheating on and going in with one of his soldiers. But this is what I mean. He left all of that behind to be on the front lines, not only in Cuba, but then again in Bolivia. And then he went to the Congo. I'm sorry, he went to the Congo and then he went to Bolivia. These are these type of people. And the only reason I say this is back when I was younger, when Ed first met me. I mean, he can tell you I was, you know, I could have been in the Red Army. You know what I mean?
we kind of bonded
over. Yeah, that's what we bonded over. We were all about the revolution. And the problem is you get older and you realize you have to be a certain type of person to do that. You have to be a person that's willing to throw away everything else because that is more important to you. I have a lot of respect for that, but a lot of people aren't like that. I am not a person like that. Please, God knows, I love my family among all those things, and I would, I just couldn't do it to them to do that. But Lord Asriel, that's where your archetype is. He is a revolutionary. He wants to end it all, and he doesn't care what it takes to get him there. Now, I would say the interesting part is we're getting on a tangent, but tangents are okay.
Do it.
The interesting thing is how that juxtaposes with Mrs. Couture.
Yes, that moment when they when he says to her, like, come with me and we're gonna, you know, we'll find out and free humanity, and she's like, no, I'm staying for my family.
Bam. Because again, they try to portray the two in the beginning as being the same type of people, but this is precisely what we were talking about last time. She's a survivalist, and I think for her, she's also a survivalist for her family. Like, she wants to carry on. Maybe it's the genetic legacy, what I was talking about with you ages ago. It's that feeling of, I have to carry on somewhere.
Yeah.
Her survival is dependent on her being good to Lyra, Lyra remembers her mother.
Right.
Lord Asriel's not even interested in survival.
Which is amazing. Like, it really juxtaposes those two characters. Miss Coulter, who you've kind of grown to hate and see her as, like, a crazy person, as actually maybe the saner of the two.
Yes. So how amazing is Phil Pullman? Like, go back to the Bible, folks, and really give it a read. And then I would encourage you, because I'm a Catholic, I would encourage you to do a contextualist approach to it, too. Read where these stories come from. You will realize Phil knew this the whole time. He set up these two as Adam and Eve for you.
Yeah.
As I said,
very, very good writing. I mean, it genuinely, this is making me want to go and read the books.
Yeah, it's subtle. And that's the beginning of this recap we're doing, which is turning into a long recap now. But the beginning of the show, the subtleness of all of this was good that it was getting out, but it was so subtle I was like, wow, are we gonna be really flat with this? Because the problem is it'll encourage you to read the books, but it's not gonna encourage you to keep watching the show.
And I think that is perhaps one of my little nitpicks, which I'm sure we'll get to. But is it too subtle? Is it too kind of...
Because what happens from here is we start going on the journey. The first part of the journey, which is freaking awesome, comes up. We see Lyra do what we knew Lyra was doing. She talks about this. Again, there's lots of foreshadowing. So if you're sitting through that first 10 minutes, folks, you haven't watched it yet, but you're sitting through that first 10 minutes, hang in there because they're dropping you a lot of breadcrumbs as to what's about to happen. She calls the bears. You know, he comes, Yorick comes, his Lyra Silvertongue, which is what she identifies as.
Hands of Bjorn.
Exactly. And this is why I was going crazy on the messaging things. Like, dude, it's about to happen. It's about to happen. It's going to go down. What you wanted is about to happen. Yeah, the Magisterium's on the roll. Yeah. The bears are coming. And I mean, the other thing that happens, so the other big part of what I was messaging last night, I can tell you the best part and the worst part about this episode was that, to me, this was the 20-minute short that was shot, that was used as the test pilot to say this should be a series. The last 20 minutes, which is what we lead up to here, which is the fight between the Magisterium and the bears, Roger getting himself chopped in half and dying, folks. The discussion he was talking about with Mrs. Couture and Lord Asriel. So there are some dips. There are a few little dips there, but generally us propelling ourselves toward the gateways, toward the openings, the rifts. And the same time this is happening, which I really enjoyed this as well, they finally brought in Will's story and made some real tension with that. They weren't doing it before, but there's this scene where he's sitting down and there's a cop and he's freaking out.
Yeah.
And it was finally, they were like, yes, this kid would be freaking out of his mind by now. Yeah. And he is. And he just, I think...
he's checking the news to see if, you know, they've reported on the dead body.
That's right. And like, and things are going crazy. And it's all building, the fight's happening, the building, and then everybody walks through the portal and fade to black.
Yeah, the climax was really
I mean,
good.
I...
And we're going to talk about
I that, was... So that's the recap, folks. Yeah. It all leads to them. Lyra has gone through the door. Lord Asriel has gone through the door. Mrs. Kultur hasn't gone through the door, but is reconvening with the Magisterium to find out what's going on. Yeah. You know...
There's a lot of, like, dust, lore kind of being thrown at you and what it really is. And
yes.
What they believe it is.
So, really, I mean, again, the best and the worst part is they cram an awful lot in this episode. Yeah. Awful lot.
Yeah.
So, okay, so moving on. Should we start? Is the grading next?
Ratings,
thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, so next we'll do the grading. Again, to give you an idea of the methodology, and I just do this for the sake of us giving a grade. You know what I mean? It's not meant to be everything, but it encourages us to discuss the different elements. So, we're doing this grade school, high school style, A through F. You can give it an A+. Plus. If you think it's great, you give an F. You usually don't do an F-. Minus. There is no E, folks. There is no E. But starting out with, I think the first one I did was the visuals.
Yeah.
Eddie, kick us off.
A plus. I thought it looked amazing. A couple of times I was like, wow, the lighting here is incredible.
Mm.
And not just that, but the battle that happens between the Panzer Bjorns and
it was like Star Wars, pew pew.
That was really cool.
And then the bears are just going, man. Yeah. There's like a whole fleet of them.
The only thing was that I wish it had lasted a little bit longer. But you know, it's a 1 hour TV show. It's not like a Star Wars movie where you can devote.
And we're gonna talk about, you know, the special questions, that was one of the big things is talking about this. And we'll get to more in depth about that.
For you, visuals?
Visuals were an A. Even the slow parts. Again, I'm taking the pacing away from the visuals. There was not, even the lab looked great. Every single bit of this looked really polished. And I think that's where I can forgive the last 20 minutes for being so good, because the rest of the series is not bad. Okay? It's just it doesn't culminate like that 20 minutes did. It was like they saved up all the money for that CGI and all the things going on. But everything in that episode looked pristine. You know, there wasn't a moment you look at it, you say, oh, that looks a bit sloppy. And trust me, we've had so many things we've watched lately that it's like, well, they did all right, but they really didn't polish that off properly.
When they parachute out of the planes.
All of it.
And their hawks are diving
but
as well.
But that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
it looks
so cool.
That section, I was like, okay, well, I'll grade visuals on that. But if I walk back to that first 30 minutes, because it's a 50-minute show, and the first 30 minutes are really slow, but it still looked great. The lab looked great.
No. The lighting in the lab
and the,
was
you know, the way they're beautiful. Doing the Aurelia Borealis, had that's really, really important. And it looks great. It looks absolutely great. So no, an A for visuals, maybe even an A+, because this was you know, they really pulled out the stops in the last one. So yeah, I'll give it the A+, because the last 20 minutes.
All right. Story?
Story. Okay. Again, and this isn't me playing fan service here, okay? This is me trying to be objective, but I gave the last one a B- because I just thought it went all over the place.
Yeah.
This built in the exact way I said that it should.
Yeah.
It was a bit slow in the beginning, so we'll give it an A-, because if it were me writing it, I would have given it just a bit more. You have these things, it's, what was it called? The Rocket Man. You have a B story that you can usually use to propel things. And because we're on the final episode, I might have used a B story. I don't know which one. But a B story to keep things moving a bit faster in the beginning. Because it was really slow.
It was, but I felt that it ramped up quite nicely. It did start very slow, but then...
No, you're right. You'll give an A. Because what happened is at the end of it, I completely forgave the opening part because I was like, thank you for dropping all those breadcrumbs. Yes. I now see. And the best part about the ending, you know, the end of this series is it actually drops you bread... It makes you realize they were dropping breadcrumbs in other episodes you weren't paying attention.
Yes.
And I was like that with Roger. So a lot of the things I was criticizing in the last couple scenes that Roger is in, all the stuff you saw before is really important because it all has a different effect on why he says something or why he does something or why Lyra's doing something. There was a bunch of that where it was like, oh, that's why that scene, that dead scene from the other episode was in there. So, yeah, so I'll give it an A with the story.
I'm with you. A for me. And in fact, I actually went back. I didn't watch the whole episode, but I watched little snippets of the first episode and the second episode, mostly looking at Roger, and you're absolutely right. They definitely laid the breadcrumbs.
It was awesome. I had such egg on my face. It was egg, folk, not anything else. But I had such egg on my face because it was like they have now explained why Roger was the way he's the orphan. He's not supposed to have a story, and that's why he likes Lyra.
Because you definitely get character.
He thinks
building.
Lyra is the orphan like him.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why it's tragic when, as soon as she really like connects with him, you know, it's just that's you needed that though, because otherwise
but
you just weren't.
But
gonna...
I do agree with you though that so by the end, it was tugging at the heartstrings, but I did wonder, had they done a slightly better job of making it a bit more obvious with Roger from the beginning, would I have felt more emotion?
I think that's the only thing I was just thinking. So in my view, and again, I'm always, you know, this is just my view, in other words. Like, I writing something is incredibly difficult. I think they did an amazing job.
They did
I gave it an A.
And adapting as well, man.
Right.
That's
so,
always tough.
But I would compare it with how we saw Billy Costa. Billy Costa, like Ed pointed out, you know, Lost Boy being one of my favorite episodes, like, he's not a big character. He has... You know, like, we're talking about Rose Tico, like, has all of like 76 time. Seconds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
However, the mother's anguish is apparent from the get-go.
Yeah.
And so they really established that early on. They could have done that in Oxford, because that whole first episode is rather slow and kind of boring, actually, to most people. It sets the scene.
A little bit of that dialogue from this
exactly.
Episode.
They could have sat on the stairs in Jordan College and had some of the conversation they have, like the one they have under the bed.
Exactly.
Like, they just could have had that earlier on, being like, you're an orphan, I'm an orphan, let's just be buddies.
And create that
And they didn't do
exactly.
that. Now I was like, you know, I don't... Maybe that they wanted to save it for the end, but I would have dropped that in early, because then you would have been following along a little bit more.
Couldn't agree
so,
more.
But yeah, story, absolutely brilliant. What's next?
Acting.
Oh, and what was your grade for story?
It was A. Okay. A minus. A minus because
of what you're saying.
In that moment when he went down, it came to my mind.
Okay.
Oh, this is pulling my heartstrings. But would it have pulled more had we done a better job?
See, and I'll give it an A because I was all in. I mean, I was almost weeping. I was like, Roger, I'm so sorry. Like, you shouldn't have gone. You were awesome. You were the coolest kid.
Okay, so acting.
Acting, again, that gets a straight A. And that is an A all around now. That's another thing. Big difference between 7 and 8, okay? 8, the acting is solid throughout. Even the support guy who I still keep forgetting his name.
Thorold.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just know, if you're ever on set with me and I can't remember your name, you'll be brother. That's everybody's brother. And women are just like, hey, you! But
okay.
No, I'm just notoriously horrible like that. I try to learn people's names in Horrible, but... Even his performance was stellar.
Everyone. Will Keane, who plays the priest.
Yep.
Him and Miss Coulter. Just everyone.
Well, you had a lot of backstory on that all of a sudden, too. The exposition on that was interesting, because you start to wonder... Now, he talks about her being, you know, previously...
Yes.
But never says it was him. And I'm like, I bet you. You know, it was either someone he knows or it was him. And then,
interesting. I didn't think about that.
No, who knows? Like, they don't explain it, but he's always all over her. Every time she's in the scene, you can tell there's some feels going on there.
Yeah.
And he's really mad about, you were a well-respected woman,
and
now you're not.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, that sounds like a jaded lover to me.
Yeah, could be. But again, brilliant performance.
Everybody's performance
for me as well.
Yeah, everybody's performance really good. Even the CGI bear, really good performance.
Oh, Pans Bjorn. And again, when they... dive out of that. It's such a World War II feeling, and like, just amazing.
He just knew it was going to happen. It was going down.
Everything was
going down.
Yeah.
So acting solid A, and not much to say other than that all the performance was good. James McAvoy, this was his episode to really do it. And
I mean, you kind of expect it from him, but he brought it.
Yeah, I mean, let me talk as producer, because God knows he knew I was going to gush at this episode because I loved it so much. But again, this was good casting choices because I don't know. I can't speak for all actors. Again, we are new at this, so I haven't had a whole lot of people in front of me. However, James was able to take the fact that he's not got a ton of screen time and play that role the way he needed to. And there's a lot of jumping, because he doesn't start out as Scary Daddy. He has to start out as the explorer, as the adventurer, and slowly get more demented, and then become semi-self-righteous at the end. Like, that's a whole gamut of emotion that I just wouldn't trust with a vast majority of actors.
Very beautiful, subtle choices that he made.
It's the kind of thing, this is where you set up the screen test, so when you bring them in, this would have been the one you handed them the sheet and saw how they could change, whether they could change quickly.
Yeah.
Because anybody else, and really there will be someone else that could have done it, but a lot of other people out there wouldn't have had the chops to carry it through such a different...
Yeah, you're kind of guaranteeing yourself... You know, when you have that kind of name actor,
That's good at that. And he did. And, yeah. and again, the reason I would have called him in would have been watching Split. And I would have said, we need someone that can do different personalities at different times and can do them on short notice.
But still maintain
that's right.
You know, cohesion.
Because each of the personalities, and trust me, there are only 7 or 8 in Split itself. And there's really, in that character, there's something like 32.
Right, yeah.
Okay, he only plays out 7 or 8 of them, and they each get only a short period of time. There's one that gets a lot of time.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of others that don't. Yeah, and so
he plays the kid quite a lot, doesn't he?
He does, a couple of them. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, I would have watched that and said, he's only going to be in the scene for this much. Yeah. But that's the kind of research you'd have to do to find someone like that. I'm sure there's a couple other movies we could think of and be like, that actor.
It was very interesting. Also, the scenes with him and Lyra. And, you know, she obviously wants to connect with him. And, you know, but I felt a distance from him.
Definitely. So if he had played it like a Charles Xavier, which is another one of his iconic roles, like it would have never worked. Because he's too... even Charles Xavier that he plays, obviously, from the older... It's the younger Charles Xavier. However, it always has that pastoral look in his eyes.
Mm.
And the way he's able to change that and then just look so distant...
Yeah.
You know, we're just gushing over James McAvoy. No, well done, James. Well done to everyone, though. Yeah. That was acting gets a solid A.
Yeah. Music.
Okay, and I was easy with this one. I gave it, I think, an A-, because there was nothing... Nothing for me, again, I'm really picky, and it's like, if you take me to a new place with the music, then cool, and it's what you really should be doing, because every episode is an opportunity for that. This one, the music was consistent, it fit very well. The ramping at the end, the music is critical for that, because you have to get tense, and they definitely brought in better tones for that.
That's why it's an A for me.
Yeah. As I said, the only reason it's an A- is there's no new themes or anything like that. It's just a ramping of tension. Again, I want you to wow me with the music if you're going to do music on something I'm putting together. And it's because, you know, I am a musician. I have a background in it. And it's the kind of thing, if you're passionate about it, really passionate about it, then that might happen. And you're always going to strive for the A+. It's very much Whiplash. You know, that kid.
Yes.
See what I mean? And I'm not, God knows, I'm nowhere.
At any cost.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. That will be the A+ for me, is someone that does the Whiplash and literally gets hit by a car but still makes the song. You know what I mean? So, A-, just because it was adequate, but obviously didn't reach new heights. And Ed gives it an A. Yeah, do you have anything to... Anything?
No, I felt at the end, I felt myself like on the edge of my seat. And obviously a lot of that is just the story. But for me, the music helped... just keep me in that moment.
It's critical. It's absolutely critical. First thing we learned as indie filmmakers, at least I did, because I was hanging out with my Fright Fest crew, and the first thing all of those directors will tell you is sound is almost everything. If you can, because, you know, the people I hang out with and the people I'm filmmaking with generally, just so we, you know, as to get on another little tangent here, are generally horror filmmakers, indie filmmakers, so these will be self-funded projects or privately funded projects, no major studio work. And so, you know, you get that chance to put it in the festival, and if it's bad, no one will ever watch your stuff again. If it's good, you may have the opportunity to make another short or make another whatever. And the ones that are really bad, it's always the sound.
Yeah.
It's the sound is off. No one has paid attention to it. Young, new directors, filmmakers, they don't look at it. And they say, oh, it'll be okay. I'll be cheap on this. Never cheap out on your sound.
No. It's always critical. Pay your sound people. And, you know, anytime I've edited something, I've always got to a point where I'm like, oh God, I don't know if this is working. And then suddenly you put even some temp tracks, a bit of music in there, and it just breathes life into a film, you know. And it is so important. Absolutely. So overall for you, for this one?
Overall was the A+.
Yeah.
Because it was
brilliant finale.
Brilliant finale. It's exactly what I wanted. And it has everybody waiting for, you know, episode or season 2, where we're going to find out where they went. You're going to get more into the rabbit. You're going to go down the rabbit hole, as it were, and see more of this. But yeah, it was an A+. It was, I was shattered by the end of it. And it was 12:30 at night. You know, it was one of those things that I wasn't shattered until it finished. And then I was like, oh man, like that was just a journey.
Mm.
Epic journey. Epically awesome.
That's good. When you watch something and you're like, physically tired, you know.
I was texting him. I was like, it all calm. I could, hold on, let me turn my phone on. I'll read them back to you. Because I was going mental about this. And we'll continue on as I find these on my phone. But I will read you what the last 20 minutes was.
It was very, very good. And like I say, I was on the edge of my seat. I felt that, they had taken me to the next level on this one, in a way that I don't know if I really expected.
Okay, talk about that a little bit.
I guess the previous episode was very epic, and you kind of get used to the Game of Thrones kind of methodology where it's not the final episode is the denouement, right? And it's the second to last, which has all the action and everything going on.
Ah, you mean the epilogue.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, you know, the last episode just kind of, you know, wraps things up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But this one just ramped up and ramped up and ramped up. And like I say, by the end, I was on the edge of my seat. I felt like I was tearing up, you know, the moment when Roger gets cut. And I think I audibly gasped. Mm-hmm. I was like, no! Which is always a good sign, you know, when you kind of can't control yourself.
It's the only disadvantage of having read the books already. It's the only part I wish I didn't know it was about to happen. But the entire time, A, I knew Lord Asriel was bad. Mm. A, I knew this was the great betrayal. You know, that I remembered from the books. And so that was unfortunate because it's like watching a train wreck. Like, you know it's about to happen. Right. And I didn't care before because I didn't like his character. And all of a sudden, I liked his character. And I'm like, do they really have to do it? Like, you know, does it have to be this way? Can they change the story at all? Like, he's just now shown me that he's such, you know, they really start getting that relationship together. And it was like, you know.
Is the betrayal that's the title of the episode? I mean, is that's Lord Asriel, right?
Killing Lyra's best friend. What he does, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's
the betrayal. That's prophesized.
Yeah.
So she's
I mean, in the previous episode when he's like, here.
Yeah, well, that's like, how I knew, because I hadn't put it together in my head absolutely yet.
Right,
you didn't recall it. Everything's vague in the books in my head, and then I was like, nope, that's exactly. And then you were asking about, like, because you loved Lord Asriel, and I was like, you're not going to like him at all.
I know, but in a way, I kind of like him more now because I dislike him. It's a more interesting character in that sense.
Well, villains are always better that way, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So,
And I'm not sure, this is the other thing I was touring with, and I didn't put it in the special question, so maybe we talk about it now. Like, so, it sets out episodes and things like this are generally, again, I'm going back to Save the Cats, so thank you, Blake Schneider, but we're always talking about the 10 different types of films, the 10 different types of stories. This starts out as a Jason and the Argonauts kind of thing, and now with all the changes in the betrayal, like, in my head, and I haven't picked out if it's something else, but I'm like, is it something else now? Is it more dude with a problem now because we're talking about Lyra and what she has to do?
What she has to do, yeah.
Or is it still Jason and the Argonauts because it's her quest? But it's a quest that she doesn't know what she's supposed to do.
Right. That's a really good question.
I'm like, it's actually, for me, it's dude with a problem because dude with a problem, he doesn't know what he has to do.
Yeah.
The whole point of the movie is for him to figure out what he needs to do.
Yeah.
And this one, it's like, oh, wait, well, it was Jason the Argonauts. I'm going to quest and take the alethiometer to my father.
Right.
Who I didn't know was my father, but whatever. And now that's done. And I guess, you know, with a long story, I guess things could shift.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think over a longer period of time, you know, a TV series, I think there is, you know, the flexibility in changing. No, that's a very, very interesting point.
I just, as you know, I'm obsessed with that book. I just sent it over to a friend today who listened to me. I got taken out to curry by one of my really good friends that I work with at my day job. And now, because we're picking up steam and because a lot of things have been happening, like, everyone is talking about my film job now. And, like, it's a hobby, right? And I'm like, yeah, because I don't want to lose my job, guys. So, you know, I'm like, yeah, it's a hobby, but I spent a lot of time with it. And then he was like, oh, tell me what you do. And I spent probably, poor guy, like an hour chewing his ear off about all the different things I was working on. Evil Death Monkeys.
Yeah.
He thinks there needs to...
Poor guy.
Evil Death Monkeys. Welcome he says it needs something else. He's like, oh, it needs something else. I was like, what about Atomic Cockroach? He's like, there, that's it. You know? Because he was asking about Sharknado, and I always tell the story about having shook hands with the guy who wrote that and how much money he made and how much he didn't even expect to write all of those. But you can't stop writing something that makes you that much money.
I mean, you know,
So you know, that was all just going on today, and I talked about Save the Cat, because give me some good screenwriting books, because he's a creative guy, and he's like, cool. And I'd like, you know, I have some ideas, how would I put them together, and I'm like, Save the Cat. I said, that'll give you the formula.
I really like it. I told you about it.
And then the other one, is it Sid Field?
Sid Field is the kind of the classic. Traditional
one. Yeah, and I haven't read that one. That'll be next on
the
my...
The Writer's Journey,
I think. Yeah, I mean, that's you know what I mean? But it just, for me, it encapsulates kind of what is... When you're looking at film or visual, something... I mean, he's done it for novels as well, apparently. But
oh, really?
Yeah, Blake Schneider, Save the Cat, the novel version whatever. To be fair, that's originally the kind of writer I was, but now I am obsessed with visual writing. I really just like it, and I think he sets up a way that you'll always get it right if you can see what he's talking about.
It's very well written and nicely laid out, which I really appreciate.
So now for our intermission, we'll have Thursday at 23:26 p.m. Dude, they have saved the entire budget for these last 20 minutes. Epic. We have much to talk about, bro. It all leads to this. I'm not kidding. It's like the last 20 minutes was the test pilot used by HBO and BBC that they used to get funding for the whole thing. The whole story is written for the film quality short. And then, of course, because it's Eddie and because he knows me too well, I said, sorry, dude, I'll shut up now.
Yeah, exactly.
When you wake up, watch the last episode, it's fan-fucking-tastic.
Sorry, dude. I'll shut up now.
So, and that was followed by earlier at 22:45. So this shows you the difference. So at 23:36 when I sent all that, at 22:45, so 10:45 last night when I started, I said... Okay, so episode 8 is slow as hell at the start, but they are seriously fixing the Roger problem. He speaks!
Yeah.
So this is what I mean. Like, that kind of journey is exactly what I'm talking about when I say good story, good filmmaking, good TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I want... That's what I want. I want to turn on the TV and be entertained that way, and I want it to make sense to me. I totally get we've spent ages talking about Rise of Skywalker and the fan stuff. That, for me, doesn't work. I'm a bit nervous now about watching Joker because all the people that have told me they didn't like Rise of Skywalker are also people who were contrarian on Joker and were like, it's not as amazing as you think it is.
I think it's always hard when things get like really hyped.
It is, because if you're... And I am just one type of you. I'm a cerebral one that wants kind of to be entertained that way.
Mm.
You know, I think some stuff just falls right off my back and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't like it. It's not...
Yeah, I tend to be quite easily pleased, but I don't know, having said that.
I was surprised with Rise of Skywalker. Usually on the big screen, God knows, I went to all the Marvel films as they came out, and some of them were good and some of them were meh.
Mm.
They weren't great, in other words, but on a big screen, you're like, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, it's the experience, isn't
it? I would say, what's another good example? Blade Runner 2049. Okay, too long of a film. So story-wise, it wasn't a bad story, but it went on forever, and it was really plodding. Mm. Like, it just didn't really have those action points. But I could care less. I saw it in 3D on an IMAX, and it was like, they were just talking about the DOP for that today, and I can't remember his name, but, I mean, he is stunning.
It's Roger Deakins.
Yeah, he's stunning.
Is also the DOP on 1917.
That was it, because I'm going to go see that on Sunday, folks. So I've been, you know,
You're a big Dune guy, aren't you?
Huge.
Yeah, like, because... Denis Villeneuve, who did 2049.
Is it Deakin doing the shots for that as well? Or no, he did, you're right. So Deneuve did 2049.
Yeah.
It's my saving hope, and a lot of other podcasters that do film reviews have talked about this, but it's probably the film I'm most excited for in 2020.
I think they're doing two.
It could go, it should be done in a ton of them. And they should do the sequels. The first, at least 2 to 3 sequels are good. Then you start having these time jumps of like 1,000 years, and that can be really tricky.
That can be tough.
But I mean, even God Emperor of Dune, without ruining it for everybody, there's a reason that's an interesting story. And I would love to see visually that taken forward, because God Emperor of Dune is a particularly visually jarring situation. I would spoil the whole thing for you if I said why.
No, so but Villeneuve, I'm a big fan of his.
And if he does what he did with 2049, so I can... And Dune would be like that. Dune would be slow as hell because it's a space opera. It's all about all these really intricate societies that interact with one another and what they're... And the politics behind it that are blended with religion.
But it's the visual that you need to kind of get right.
Yes, because that's what will captivate people through the boring bit, to speak. So the rocket fuel that will keep you sitting in your seat for 2.5 hours or 3 hours, however long it's going to be.
Okay, tangent.
Yeah, always.
All right, favorite scene? Worst scene?
Favorite scene. Ooh, this is going to be tough now. I don't even remember what I wrote down for this now.
I mean, you wrote the Bears versus Magisterium showdown.
Yeah, I mean, I could put the whole last 20 minutes there. It's not one scene, though. That's probably about 10 scenes.
Yeah.
But the short film they made that got the rest of the series tacked on to it.
I love it. This is
it's so true, though. You're
sure that this is how they did it.
I was, because that's how I would do it. I would have been like, guys, have you seen what we did? HBO and BBC, we got together, we put a bit of money together, and this is freaking awesome. Oh, yeah. We're going to make a whole series out of this.
Yeah.
And I would have literally gone to everybody's door with that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, had it on my little phone and been like, you've got to watch this. Mm-hmm. This is like the coolest 20 minutes of your life right here.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what is the best scene? I don't want to pick, like, Lyra with Roger because that slowed things down and it wouldn't have been my favorite scene. You know what? I'll go with Lord Asriel and Coulter having that conversation.
Yes.
Because it was a slow point, but it puts right a lot of things. It makes a lot of sense, and it's a really good juxtaposition of two characters.
Yeah.
And what they might do and what they might not do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll go with that one.
And I would agree with you. I think that you're also seeing two great actors going toe-to-toe, and that always gets me jazzed.
I guess that's the other thing, too, right? And they're playing Adam and Eve, so you're like, ooh!
Yeah, no, it's brilliant.
And it's proper Adam and Eve moment, because it's like, do we go forward or do we go backwards? Right. What do we do?
But, I mean, you know, honorable mention, again, when they start parachuting out and that whole thing starts.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what I mean. The other scene is, like, the 20 bears running down the hill, and I was like, oh my god!
Yeah.
Bearmageddon!
For me, like, when the hawks are also, like, diving,
you know? The build-up is, it's kind of quick, because all of a sudden That's the only thing about it. The dark music comes on, and you're like, wait a second, I think, and you'd seen bits and pieces before, though, it's the only reason we'll probably debate about this in a second, but like it all made sense once the dark music came on. I was like, that's why I saw 20 soldiers getting into a thing, that's why they were locking and loading, that's why before we had the bears coming around the corner, like it's on Donkey Kong,
exactly, like just all building up to that. If it had been a little bit longer, I think I would have had to choose that as my favorite.
Okay.
But they left me wanting more, which is not necessarily a bad thing. What about worst?
Worst scene, just pacing-wise, is the... I could have... You know, again, this is producer hat, so a producer is always looking at what he can cut. Trust me, the guys who collaborate with me hate that, because I'm like, we don't need that. We can cut that. We can cut that. We can cut that. For me, you'll get all of, like, 5 minutes of film after I'm done with it, you know? Because... Get to the point!
Yeah.
So, again, get to the point. Like, that whole scene with Lyra waking up, the guy I cannot remember his name...
Just, it's four... Old. Hoda. So just
Hoda.
Thorold.
That guy was easy. He said his name all the time. I would be best friends with that guy. Hoda. What's up, Hoda? You guys, he's really a Swedish DJ, by the way.
Awesome dude.
I've never met
Swedish?
Him.
Swedish? I thought he was English.
Is he English?
I think he's English.
I don't know. My brother-in-law's met him, so.
No, he seems very cool. I agree with you. I still, even though it was good and there was high tension, whenever we went back to kind of real Oxford, like Will's storyline.
Okay.
I was always a little bit like, oh, let's just go back to Lyra.
Really? So you still were kind of jarred by the two?
A little bit.
I had a lot less of that. I wouldn't have cut any of that because it builds for that tension at the end.
No, it's very necessary. You need
something to push
him
through that window.
You're absolutely right.
And the only thing I will say about the window, by the way, and it's because I blinked, like, where did that come from? Like... The only thing I was like in the books, he has a knife and he cuts holes into the world so he can move between them. That's the subtle knife.
Yeah.
I don't think he has that yet.
That's coming up. It must, they've talked about the knife in the
spoilers,
tower.
Spoilers. But it
came to the, and I wasn't sure
this
about
is the this. One you said, you were like, is it open all the time? It must be. Yeah. And that was the thing I was
and
like.
And is it the same one that he always comes through?
I don't know. It must have been. Because he just ends up in the park and all of a sudden he walks through it and I was
it
like.
It looks a bit different because I could be wrong. I'm going to watch
that
all
part
the episodes
and that happens. I mean, this is like Force Awakens when I was asking and we cut this all out of the podcast.
Okay.
But that discussion you had on explaining to me who the First Order was. Because in Force Awakens, First Order shows up and I'm like, wait, but I thought the Imperial dudes were dead. Like, what was the point of the last film if they just came back to life? Like, that kind of sucks. So again, I didn't really understand it, but I didn't care. I was like, there's enough tension to tell me in the story that, mm-hmm. despite the fact I'm not quite sure where he found this thing, that, yes, he's on the run from the cops. Right. Like, that's what he would do. And that was the scene that did it for me. So, again, like, it's all about the build. I can handle the dry scenes in the beginning with Will because mm-hmm. that scene in the store with the cop, like, that's it.
Yeah, it was tense. It was tense. It also did make me wonder about the cat. Like, was the cat was sent there by someone to bring him to the gateway. At least that was my assumption. Otherwise,
there's a cat.
Yeah.
Didn't catch the cat.
The little cat kind of... Because he goes...
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about the cat. The cat is... I would spoil things.
See, I wasn't wrong!
You've just explained why Will goes through the thing. Okay, so there's a cat.
Yes,
okay. So that'll make sense. The first episode of season 2.
See, there you go.
I'm sure they'll explain and that, about
that
the
was
cat.
My hope. My hope, because I was confused in that moment. I was like...
Can I ruin it?
No, don't ruin it.
Okay.
You're not allowed.
Okay.
All right. Specific questions now.
Now all I can think about is that fucking cat.
Save that cat.
That's right.
All
right. That's what we're going to do.
Did the pacing of the episode work, in your opinion?
Yes. And I put that there because I wanted to say that quintessentially, yes, it did work. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was going to at the first.
Right.
And I was still going to love this series and say, His Dark Materials is awesome. It was great. But I was also going to say, but it was a bit boring.
With a caveat.
And then all of a sudden, I mean, my pacing for a story, I'd probably kick it off a bit more only because I am so formulaic with that.
I got you.
And I'm following instruction from a guy who did Hollywood spec scripts. So they want to wow you a bit quicker.
Yeah.
But for the sake of this, it works fine.
Yeah.
It starts out really slow. Again, pacing is a bit of an issue with the entire series so far.
I would agree with that.
So maybe, I don't know. They did what we asked them to do. I said last time, they need to start out slow and ramp it. And then leave you at the ramp.
Exactly.
Because then you will love this show. And they did that, so I can't complain. Yeah. No, the pacing was fine.
For me, this episode was arguably the best paced episode, simply because it does start very slow, but the climax that it reaches is fantastic. So I think it was probably my favoritely paced one.
Yeah, that's the thing. I wonder, the difference would be in writing, and this is just normal writing. Normally you have the impact statement to start out and that grabs people's attention. I was taught that in high school and it works. It works every single time. So your first paragraph always has something that grabs someone's attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering whether I would have done that here and thrown in something to grab your attention. But then my complaint would have been, and this is literally me arguing with myself, this is what writers do. So then I would have complained that it got too hot and cold too quickly.
Right.
So by starting out so cold and giving me loads of exposition, so I'm bored, so I'm listening like, oh, all right, this is all the stuff that we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slowly starts being like, oh, and he's going to do the thing I know he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, God, this is getting worse. And then you see the war about to start, and you're like, oh, they're gonna really, really go all out for this one. And then the budget kicks in.
Right.
That, God, maybe that's the only gripe about the pacing is I would, not so much as far as story, but money-wise, I would have spread the money out maybe a little bit further. Because, man, having that last 20 minutes look cinema quality, I could have been in a fight. It was like, wow, man, what happened to the rest of this? Like,
I think it's always a tough decision.
Nah, I mean, it's production decisions, and you'll always second guess it. There's not anything that's come out. Read my blog. Please read my blog, because that was one of the most heartfelt. I literally wrote that coming back from our screening last week, because Ed and I were at a screening of a movie that he and I worked on. We collaborated with Posh Dinosaur Productions to make Shredders. And, I mean, I watched it. I've watched that 100 times now, and I still have qualms with it. I still have things I'm not happy about with it. I still have that.
That's inevitable.
And then you see someone watch it, and you're like, oh, my God, are they going to see all this stuff? Are they going to say the same thing?
Mm.
And the funny thing is most people didn't. Most people will watch your stuff and then say, oh, it was really good, man, or laugh at the points you want them to laugh, And so it's all, I still would have gone back and changed it, but that's the whole point. That's filmmaking, and that's what we do. So
absolutely.
I think, again, A plus the episode.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously you've talked a lot about how much how strongly you felt about the last act of this episode. Mm. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, from a production angle, the gripes I had, I guess that's the part I haven't really explained as to why is that so bad. Because to me, the problem is you could have cut the whole rest of the story out at that 20 minutes.
Right.
And so We had this. The short that we showed was a guy coming to me with a feature script. It wasn't a guy, it was Michael. Coming to me with a feature script and saying, I've got this idea. I didn't think we'd ever be able to get enough money to get the full idea done just on our own backs because I don't have any big connections. Anyone who wants to give me money to make a film, please call me.
Get in touch.
Get in touch. Because
LaboratoryProductions.com.
I am not someone that has studio connections or anything like that. I just like making films and I tend to be quite organized, so people have put me as the producer. So, you know, I said, take your proof of concept, put it down to 15 minutes, and then we'll use like a 5-minute sizzle reel to roll this out to people and see if anybody wants to make the feature with you.
Mm-hmm.
Which that didn't happen in the end. We ended up making a 15-minute kind of reel. We had a director that had a different view. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, same kind of thing with His Dark Materials. It's like, why is that 20 minutes so good?
Right.
And the rest of it kind of iffy. Yeah. And it's not that the rest of it's iffy. It's just it showed me all of a sudden that had I made this, I probably could have done it in 4 episodes with a lot less in between.
Right. Yeah. But of course, then you get into the whole minimum episode kind of deal.
And people like that love that book would have been shouting at me.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is what happens when you're a producer. People get mad at you. They're like, it's not fair. You're ruining the story. It's like, my perspective, and this is just my perspective. I don't know if all producers think this way. But my perspective as a producer is anybody who I am producing for is trying to get their movies or their films or their TV shows or their YouTube channel watched. Okay, and to do that, you have to appeal to the largest audience possible. I had this conversation last night with Ed about horror because sometimes we can write things that will pitch specifically for a horror crowd. The problem is for us, that's really limiting because if you want to get your name out there, you're going to go around the horror circuit a bunch of times. You may be well respected in horror, but the minute you go to TIFF, and this has happened, on 3 different things I've worked on. The minute you go to TIFF and want Toronto to look at what you're doing or Sundance to look at what you're doing, they could care less.
Yeah.
And so I want to have filmmakers working under my production company that are being noticed because everybody we work through is so hyper talented. And that's something you'll find in the industry. It's awesome. There are so many good people. People don't get films made because they're the most talented. They get it because a lot of factors came in at once. Mm. Okay. I have a lot of really talented people that work under our label or collaborated with us that we can't get them off the ground because they're just not noticed by the right people. So again, the shortening of the 20 minutes, it's because I want as many people as possible to say, wow, man, His Dark Materials was the best thing on TV.
Mm.
And they didn't do it this time. It was a bit longer. Your brother came off the rails on what episode?
Yeah, 6, I think.
So think of it that way. Okay, that's the best way for me to describe this. And sorry, I'm having a proper rant now. Like, what happens to the viewer that turned off in episode 6?
Right, they're not going to get to this.
What happened to the viewer that turned off in episode 7?
Mm.
Episode 2, turn off.
Mm.
You never get to that 20 minutes at the end. You never see what this could be.
So would you have spread the money out a little bit more evenly? Or would you have front-loaded that kind of heavy, you know, VFX budget, kind of stuff?
It's a very tough call. Like I said, I might have miniseries the whole thing and said, all right, we'll do this in an hour and a half for the first book because I don't have that much money. Again, it's all about how much money did you guys have? And I'm asking because that's what it looks like. If I had, you know, 20 million, then boom, I can do a lot more with that than if I only have 5 million.
Right.
With 5 million, and I think that's about, I'm guessing, but you know, that last 20 minutes to make that last 20 minutes, let's say it was roughly 5 million. Okay. Then you just gotta, you know, just think, how can I stretch that 5 million out further?
Interesting.
And you have to, because by doing it this way, as I said, you're gonna have lost viewers before they ever got to that epic 20 minutes that would have sold it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That last 20 minutes, that's Star Wars. Mm. People would have watched it and be like, I have to find out what this is about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Again, there aren't answers to this. And God knows, if anyone actually listens to this that worked on this production, and I had said this before when we were talking about Game of Thrones, but seriously, anybody that has Dark Materials has any insight on this stuff, I'd love to know. I not because I want to sit here and tell you did it wrong. These are fascinating things to me as a producer. Like,
the decisions and the choices.
How much money did you have? How did you spread it out? Like, this is why you fall in love, I think, with filmmaking. Because to every good and bad film, every good and bad TV show, there is a story. And oftentimes, the story is more interesting. They said that about Star Wars. They said, Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. And I imagine this will be true. You'll find out, because I will do the whole deep dive and probably all the commentaries. But once I find out what happened in the background for Rise of Skywalker, I'm telling you, that might be the better story than the actual movie.
Right.
And no.
It was really interesting, that thing that you sent me, which apparently the script from the original director got
So I sent that to, you know, I've been a kind of on an obsession trip with it because I listened to Slash Filmcast. You guys rock. You're like my favorite thing on podcast right now. But they did 4 hours talking about why they didn't like the show. And it was an antithesis to the BBC show I watched. And BBC, we love you. But the two people on that were like, I love the show. And I immediately turned off the podcast because I was like, nope, not for me. These people are going to talk about films and we're not going to be on the same page. And that's how it works. You know, unfortunately, with podcasts, people have to be on your wavelength to want to listen to you. So, but these guys spent 4 hours talking about it, and it was like, yeah, man. Like, so I was putzing around looking at this stuff, and it turns out that there is a leaked script. Now, whether it's accurate or not, no one knows.
Disney hasn't commented.
No, and no one.
I don't think they will.
No one really will. But there's a supposed Colin Trevorrow script that is the script that I would have written, or at least the way I would have done it, that doesn't tank The Last Jedi, because what we've established with a lot of people who didn't like Rise of Skywalker, my problem with Rise of Skywalker is the way it completely erases the film before it. And it's like, don't do that. You know, like, don't. It just makes me feel like I wasted my money. Like, if you want to make three separate films, make three separate films, but, and call them different things. Make a Rogue One, Rogue Two, and Rogue Three. I don't care. But the fact that they're all supposed to be connected together and that you felt like you did that for me in the end and you didn't really, I was upset about that. So his version very much kind of takes what it does is it leaves out Emperor Palpatine and all that stuff, which I thought was brilliant because that was one of the worst additions. But it makes Kylo Ren incredibly dark,
right?
Which is where I would have gone with it. I mean, he comes across as an incredibly dark guy. So, and it's Adam Driver. You could have gotten that performance out of him in a heartbeat. You know, he can play evil. Know,
surprise, surprise, no kiss.
Oh, yeah, well, and there was a lot of discussions about that stuff, too.
Yeah, apparently JJ wasn't happy with that.
No, either. Because why did we need it by Disney? And I didn't think they were like that anymore, but I guess they are.
I mean, they're very much like, we have to stay on brand. I don't know. Again, it's fascinating to kind of hear a little bit of the backstory as to, you know.
Well, this is what I told you last time. This is how I fell in love with the Hobbit films. Because originally, I mean, I've watched them and I was like, wow, I can't believe we went from Lord of the Rings to this. And then I watched Peter Jackson and his crew show you all the work they put in. That's another thing that will happen. If you watch the work people put into films, you would probably never say anyone had a bad film.
Yeah.
Because it's just,
you would always applaud anyone
who got it. It's such a Herculean task. Yeah. That's what's so cool about it.
Yeah.
But you just hear their perspective on what they were trying to do, and you kind of see why it didn't put out. And they don't talk about producers coming in and saying, but you have to do this, but you can see it every step of the way. You can see, this is why that character's in there, and this is why they had to do that. And so, anyways, getting back to that, you know, looking at the series as a whole, would I have done things differently? Probably, but I don't know what pressures they had. And a fly on the wall kind of thing, I would love to know. As I said, the key thing with the Star Wars thing is knowing what Kathleen Turner said to everybody, because it has pretty much come down.
Kathleen Kennedy.
Sorry, not Kathleen Turner. Jesus, sorry, Kathleen Turner. Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah.
What she said to everybody about this. Do you know what I mean? Because it was like, it's clear there was some mixed messaging there.
Yeah.
And she is legend. You know what I mean? Yeah. Worked with Lucas, worked with Spielberg. Yeah, so definitely has the gravitas. But it looks like, as I said, they didn't have the brunch.
Right. Did you hear, coming back to his Dark Materials, So season 2 was greenlit before season 1 had even come out.
And I think you had to do that. If you've read the books, like, why would you? You couldn't possibly just tell. I mean, it was always, the first book ends the way you saw it.
Right.
That's it.
And then,
I mean, you don't know the Will part, but otherwise, the first book is her walking through.
Right. But apparently HBO are, like, holding, I think the BBC want to, like, greenlight season 3 immediately. But HBO holding back. Why do you think that?
That makes sense to me because HBO is a two season runner when it comes to their shows.
Okay.
Carnival.
Yeah.
All the ones in the late 90s,
early 2000s.
They don't run long series. Like they just don't think it's necessary. Right. They're brilliant with that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
There's a lot of material here though because you've got, I mean, the Book of Dusk.
Of course it is, but if it's not going to make them any money or no one's going to watch it, then you're not going to make it. And that's what people always forget. Like,
it seems
we were talking about it with the Terminator. Like, you gotta have money to make these things. If people don't watch them, then nobody goes back and makes another one.
It seems like it's been quite popular.
It's kind of a bummer. It's the only thing producer Jason didn't really look up is the viewership, if they had it.
It's very hard with streaming services. They don't like to let people know.
Okay.
The only metric I think that they have is how many people are talking about it online, like on Twitter.
Cool. And stuff again, like that. For people listening, if anyone knows how they judge these things, then let me know, because it's something I'd be very interested in. Because again, that's your metric of how much money you're going to make as a producer. Yeah. And who gets fired and who doesn't get fired is the execs.
Okay, next question. Emotional investment in the character. Did you feel there was like enough of it for you?
I put that in there because of Roger.
Yeah.
Again, we talked about this, so I won't spend too long on it, but I was surprised at how quickly they could get me to emotionally invest in his character in the last episode.
Yeah.
However, I would have liked more time with it.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
Because we spent more time with the other key relationships. Yeah. The only other one that was that short was Lord Asriel, and that's because they have to switch it on you.
Right, because there's a reason
they deliberately have to show you that this is going to be a fleeting relationship.
Yeah.
But Mrs. Coulter and Lyra, we definitely had enough scenes with those two. Mm-hmm. Lee and Lyra, that's another one where I would have done a couple more scenes.
Yeah.
To show what kind of like, he's the real dad. But that's the other thing to mention, okay? And it's very important, and I'm not spoiling too much for this, but mm-hmm. This may be my actual favorite scene.
In this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
When she dismounts Yorick and has to cross the bridge.
Interesting.
But that's because, again, I'm mildly spoiling things, because I know what's coming next.
Okay.
And because I'm a person, the half spoiler I will give you, okay? And I'm doing this in a personal story, so you'll actually be interested in it. So, in 2005, I left America, and I knew it was going to be forever. I got on a plane. I booked this trip to Korea, and I'll be honest with you, in my heart, I knew I was never coming home again.
Wow.
So, I will never forget the image of being at the airport and hugging my mother and watching her cry and waddle as I walked off, because she also knew I was never coming back again. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I hate any of my family, by the way. It's just because my mother always understood what kind of person I was going to be. Mm. And I am that kind of person. It's one of the things you can say, thank you. That's a big moment when she leaves Yorick.
Mm.
Because she's not...
Oh, that was a... That, yeah, that
because
was.
At least in... And as a mild spoiler, at least in that episode, she's never going to go back to the...
Right.
He can't go with her where she's going. Yeah. That's the best way I can put it. He can't go with her.
Yeah.
Neither can Lee.
And that was... Like, that relationship is, you know...
That was... And that's what I'm saying. That was almost closer than her and Lee. And I don't know how it plays out in the books. I don't... Mm. As I said, I wouldn't pretend to say that I know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, first of all, epic, because it's like, that's another relationship they really built well.
Yeah.
Like, and they did a lot of time on that. Maybe, as a producer, I would say that's right, because he's more visual.
Yeah.
So the fact that she has this, like, you know, friendship, but almost like brother-sisterhood with this bear, because she's the only one that really stuck up. She did what he needed to do and helped him along, almost like they...
I would even say like father-daughter a little bit as well.
Yeah, and so that's what I mean when she's like getting off and being like, no, I have to do this. Yeah, that is big. That's really big. And it definitely, it's making me kind of tear up now, because I'm like, it's so hard. You know what I mean? Like,
No,
maybe it's because I'm a father, and it's like really he has moment. To watch her go and be like, good luck.
I can't
come with you.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Brings up all the feels, mate. It's getting dusty in here.
So
that was my feelings. How about your feelings on it?
Like I said, my only issue was at the end with Roger. I was like, oh, I feel there was a missed opportunity to have me even more invested in this. Mm-hmm. But you're right. They did a good job in rectifying perhaps what they didn't get to do early on in the season. That moment with Yorick, you're absolutely right, was very moving. Asriel, Miss Coulter, I mean, just...
When then she goes over the bridge, she almost falls off the bridge.
That's the moment where I was like, ah!
Exactly. Then you're probably right. It's probably the father moment for me, because I'm like, oh my God, no, don't hurt yourself.
You're just...
It's tough.
Okay. Now, the ending. How did it feel cliffhanger-y? Did you feel satisfied with, like, the full stop?
I love having Ed read my questions. It's really cool. It's like, I know, it's a good question, isn't it? Because I wrote it.
But I add a little sauce. I'm adding a little sauce this time.
A little saucy sauce. Why don't you answer that one to start out then, Ed?
Well, immediately, I was upset that we didn't get a glimpse of where she was stepping into. However...
Interesting.
After a little bit, like a moment with the credits and stuff like that, I was like, no, that's cool. That's cool, because they've got me excited for my imagination's firing as to, ooh, what could it be? Is she... Because at first I was like, is she going to go into, like, real Oxford and Will's going to, like, show up and find, like, dead Roger and be like, what the hell just happened?
You really don't want to ask me any of these questions.
I know. No, these are questions that I was asking myself. But, no, I liked it. I thought it was good. It kept me, like, engaged. But it felt like everything had wrapped up well.
It's true to the book. So the books, that's the weirdest part about the end of The Golden Compass or Northern Lights, whichever one you're calling it. Is that it just ends like that. And it's like she walks through the thing and you're like, and then what?
Right.
And immediately in The Subtle Knife, like I'm saying, like you have the whole Will story to start out, mm-hmm. which disorients you, but also like it's all good by chapter two of the second book.
Right.
It starts out a little bit weird. This one will just kind of get running. And maybe, again, talking about pacing, maybe it will set the pacing right for this, because instead of having to do, oh, this is Will, and this is what Will does, mm. and Will has this problem, they've already laid it out on the table for you, so there's going to be the encounter.
Right.
And that's what you need, because we just want to get to the point in the beginning of season two. You want to see where everything leads, but you also need to get the action moving for the act two, for the next part of this plot.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting, them actually meeting, mm-hmm. which I'm assuming is going to happen... in the next
season. I think so. As I said, I don't always remember everything perfectly well. So I was pretty sure, obviously that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, to answer your question, mm-hmm. was it cliffhangery? Was it?
Yeah.
It was this mixture of both. And I guess I put the question in there because, again, I wanted to exemplify that I think they did that just about right. And you said that. Yeah. It's what you were pointing out, that like... You have to do the cliffhanger because you want people to come back for season two.
Yeah.
And it's not fair otherwise. I can't think of any series I've ever watched that ends on a non-cliffhanger and you're like, oh, I'm so excited for season two. Every single one. The really great shows are the ones that always end on a cliffhanger.
The trouble is, though, that then they get cancelled and then you're like, God damn you!
Yeah,
like,
Sarah Connor Chronicles. Good example. That was it. This end of that is a cliffhanger that's leading you into this awesome third series. And then Dollhouse.
And then Dollhouse. What about so the season's over,
mm-hmm.
8 episodes. Which one's your favorite? We talked about this last week, but
we come back to it. It's kind of our thing at the end here, and it's like I was desperate not to say episode 8, and I'm like, it was episode 8. It was definitely the last episode.
Okay.
Because it all just comes together so well. I can't really, the Lost Boy.
It's the best paced one. The Lost Boy episode was really good.
Yeah, that's a close second to me, but it just doesn't have this last, it doesn't have the short video, the 20, right. 20 minute.
the sizzle reel.
That's what it is. I told you, like, I could have cut it comes down to that 20 minutes. I could have done so many things with people with that. I'd be like, oh man, you gotta check this out.
For me, it's an odd one, but it's the second episode, because it's the one that really drew me in, and it's the one where Ruth Wilson like is just insane. And there's the two demons fighting.
Well,
and...
it's the kind of thing. Now, the other weird thing about this series is how many subtle things are going on at once. Because I noticed it a lot in the 8th episode because I was really trying to look.
Yeah.
I would encourage you, me, and everyone else, and we won't do a podcast on it, but seriously, if you're listening, go back and rewatch all 8 episodes.
Do you think it has rewatchability?
Definitely. I would say the first thing I noticed, the reason I'm saying that, is there's a very... Okay, so the scenes with Asriel and Mrs. Coulter, they jump from the books. So, in the books, and the demons thing in the books is way different. There are, God knows there's a lot of people that are reviewing this that don't like the treatment of the demons in the TV show.
Interesting.
Because it's very different from the books.
Okay.
I'm not one of those people. I could care less. Like, you have to do things differently.
Yeah.
I don't want to just sit and moan about the fact that it's not. And I don't knock people that do. It's just, I guess maybe I do. Because it's like, well, nothing's perfect. Yeah. However... One of the things that comes out in the very end of the 3rd book, and it means something in that part of the book, is when the demons play together. And you have to notice how interactive they are. So if you see demons following each other, which is what we saw with Roger and Lyra, that means they're playing and they're friends. If you see them touching each other, it's different.
Yeah, because in this episode, when Lord Asriel and Miss Coulter
and Asriel's touch each other,
there's a
that means something.
Yeah,
think of it like old 70s, you know, scenes where you see the rainbow. It reminded me of that scene from Anchorman. He's like, "Oh my god!" You know, like it's not quite like that. And in the books, it has to be subtle because it happens at a certain time where the two characters would definitely not have sex.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that happens later in the books, much later, and it's pointed out as being very unusual.
Right.
So when I saw it in episode 8, I was like, I wonder how many of these other demon things they've pulled forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought it was appropriate to do that. So that's what I guess my point is. It was put in episode 8. It said it's the end of the Amber Spyglass, so it's like 600 pages in the future, but I completely agreed with that decision.
Mm.
Because you have to show their connection. You have to show that they do actually deeply love each other. They just fundamentally are different people.
That was the one thing that I felt didn't get wrapped up, was her demon, who we never hear speak, and it's away from her at certain times.
Sure. The mysterious monkey.
Yes, I'm expecting that to be... Well, it's even
more mysterious. I think, A, there's more to be said about that,
mm-hmm.
that will kind of go on, but, you know... When they do scenes together, though, like that, I'm remembering a lot of really good images from this episode. Yeah. And this must tell you just how good the episode was. That scene where she's sitting there and they're both got their hands on their head, like, was brilliant.
Yeah.
Again, it's part of this is why I'm saying, like, why is the 8th episode, you know, maybe it doesn't really pair, none of the other episodes really pale in comparison to this.
Mm.
Why is it so much better than all the other episodes? Because that was another really good scene. Because you're understanding just how they reflect each other.
Yeah.
And it's sitting there frustrated. And also, she was like tapping it on the head, being like, it'll be okay. Because they're freaking out about seeing Lord Asriel.
Yeah. And the snake as well. Which
on the car. Yeah. Snake on the car. And that, again, if you haven't figured out yet, he's not... This one I can say, you know, not spoiling anything by telling you what he's not. He's not really the devil. Like, I don't remember Lord Boreal being the devil. Like, I think I would have remembered that, because devil's always one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the devil. That's why he has the snake. So Adam, Eve, and the snake.
Right.
Because he's trying...
That suddenly made so much sense.
Exactly. That's why I kept saying source material. And you thought I was talking about the books. I'm like, the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
This is all being taken from the creation story in the Bible.
And that was really interesting. And it relates
to original sin, which is dust.
Right. That was a whole really interesting part of the episode. I liked the exposition in this episode.
That goes to, and I think it's important, because that is the core of why I like the books. One of the reasons I came out of Christianity, and I was a Catholic, and I am still technically a Catholic, I guess.
Lapsed Catholic.
A lapsed Catholic. But I mean, I went to all Catholic schools until I was in university. I almost went to seminary.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things. When I was young, I was really pious and really into the Bible. I just think it's one of those interesting... I love storytelling, right? And some of the best stories are in the Bible.
The greatest story ever told.
But one of the fundamental problems I always had with the way Catholicism teaches you, and Catholicism, this is bigger than it is as a Protestant, is the concept of original sin. So there's a concept in Catholicism that says, before the day you are even born, because Adam and Eve took the apple in the garden, you are born a sinner. You cannot escape that. And that's the whole reason people have to be baptized. So, Catholicism is the old religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it believes that if you're not baptized, you know, you can read Dante's The Inferno, another one of my favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
But all the babies who aren't baptized end up in limbo. So they end up in not
purgatory.
It's like a purgatory. It's not a horrible part of hell, but it's a part of hell.
Right.
It's the first layer of hell in Dante's Inferno.
I liked the very overt way that they kind of talked about religion, and I loved the moment where they're talking about Adam and Eve, and he says, and her demon. And then you're like, whoa, of course. Like, you know, their world interprets it kind of
That's right. So this is the thing. Like, and I like how you're like, oh, they're talking about religion. Like, religion is the crux of this story.
Yeah.
You may not see it yet, but it makes more sense. I can say more about it because Lord Asriel has set out to you some of his qualms.
Yeah.
Which is going back to this original sin stuff that I don't like. Again, he took a concept like that. And Philip Pullman, I would think he's an agnostic, if I remember correctly, which means agnostic is someone who believes in God, but God has gone far, far away, you know, which is probably completely legit. Who knows? But the point is, the concept of original sin is, it's to me, it's a trick. So we could go into talking about Dune with this, because Dune talks about religious tricks that you use to keep people booming. If you tell everybody they're guilty and they can only be saved by talking to you, then you're setting it up that way. That's the part that Lord Asriel's not happy about. It's the part I'm saying I'm not happy about, because it doesn't make sense to me. People wouldn't be just born to be born in trouble. Like, the concept of trouble has to be a reaction to something. So it's like the concept, there is no devil without a god. Okay, you can't have one without the other. It's why, you know, Eastern religions have a slightly different view on this. So this is all going to play together in showing kind of the statement, again, the thesis of Philip Pullman in the end, saying, this is why I reject certain things about God, the authority, and certain other things like original sin. Because this is his big rejection of
right.
And you're going to find out more.
I'm super excited to...
You know, Mecha Jesus is coming.
Not really, but... I'm super excited to kind of delve a little bit deeper into that aspect. You know, I like stuff like that. And I didn't feel it was too hit you over the head with it. You know, it was just like...
No, they've eased it in the book does the same... I would remotely say that the book does it the same way. They have to ease you into it because it is a major part of the story, but it's obviously something that they know you're going to have a knee-jerk reaction to. That's why they're saying the authority, not God. Because A, it's going to be on BBC, and you're going to have loads of Church of England people watching. And these are all, in no offense, the Church of England's awesome guys, but these are the types of people that can pick up the phone and say, I'm not happy about you showing a film.
Don't use my money for
for your anti-God crap. You know?
And
this isn't anti-God crap. Again, you know,
I benefit
of Catholics
way.
Who taught me. I was taught by a bunch of Jesuit teachers. Jesuits are awesome people, but you know, Catholicism is all about the idea of questioning things too. You don't just blindly accept things all the time. You have to in the end, and that's eventually what pushed me away from Catholicism, because I'm just not that type of person. But they would openly tell you to question these things, talk about these things. And that's what he's trying to do here. I don't think he's trying to tell anybody how you have to think. I think he's just trying to say...
You can see...
How is it...
His point of view.
How is it fair if you're born into a world where literally by the time you reach puberty, you are already damned?
Right. He's kind of pointing out and the obvious in a way.
So, cool. Have we run out of time?
That's it, man.
Oh, I don't want to go.
I know, but like, you need to...
I didn't want to see Roger go. I didn't want to see Lyra go.
That was emotional.
It was emotional.
But I'm, like I say, I'm super excited to see what's coming next.
Very good. Predictions?
Well, I think...
And I won't make any, because I know what's going to happen.
Okay. I think, I'm hoping... that we'll get to see lots of different worlds or parallel dimensions. I think that will be cool. I'm curious to see if Lord Asriel is going to be a distant threat as opposed to a present threat. And maybe Lord Boreal might be more the kind of present threat. And I'm excited to see Will and Lyra come together and see how, you know, how that dynamic pushes the story forward.
Very good, very good. Lord Boreal, where was he at the end of the show? I don't remember that part.
Last I remember, he was
in the car.
Yeah, snake in the car. And
that's right, he knows he has to track the boy.
Yes, he's like
For the knife.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and he knows about the Tower of Angels.
Yes.
And
all stuff.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
So that's
cool. It's going to be really cool when we get to that point.
Yeah, but I'm super sad that we're probably not going to see any more Pans of Bjorn.
You never know. Never know.
Fingers crossed.
Never know. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. Like I said, the next episode we will be moving into. We haven't picked what film we're going to do.
No, not yet.
I haven't looked at the list yet, so unfortunately I have to be a bit of a surprise for you two. Again, this is going to be like Film School 101. We really just want to do this for our 10 favorite films. I want to do it because I am in Film School 101. As I said, I don't leave anywhere without talking, looking, reading something about film, and I kind of want to hear Ed's views on a lot of different of my favorite films and some of his favorite films. So
likewise.
10 episodes of that. Please stay with us. If you hate it, go turn on to something else. When we get done with those 10, we'll pick something you do like. So but remember to
should be interesting.
Yeah. Like, subscribe, comment. We really do want to hear from people on this. We've had some comments on our Dirty 20 videos, which is the D&D videos that Ed's do. We had a couple comments on the podcast, but not much, but really discussion is our thing, if you haven't noticed. So please reach out to us, let us know. You can text us on Facebook, Love Victoria Productions, or Jason Schroer, Edward Burgos personally. We don't mind. We're on LinkedIn as well with Love Victoria Productions. We are on Instagram and Nano LVP. He puts out the best pictures. And then Jazzy J. Schroer if you want some production pictures mixed with my family. We also have a Twitter account. It's Mouth Love Victoria. That's with the at symbol in the front. I am always checking that just because my friends say a lot of really funny things on Twitter. And then, of course, we have the website, which is www.lovevictoriaproductions.com. We're very proud of that. It has expanded greatly in the past six months.
You can see stuff we've done, stuff we're working on.
It's part of the reason we do this. You know, if you like the way we talk, then come watch some of the shorts we do. We have a bunch of them on there. One of my favorite to watch still. And yes, I am one of those people that loves to go back and watch my old stuff. But we did a 60-second short years ago in my office, if I remember correctly, for this thing. And I mean, it looks, no offense, Ed, because we did the best we could with it.
We did what we could.
It looks terrible, but it's hilarious to me because it's like what two filmmakers will do. So please, www.victoriaproductions.com, check us out. But otherwise, we will catch you next time when we start talking about top 10 films. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Peace.